from Illinois.
Illinois?
We met in Chicago, Northwestern University.
I'm from Detroit.
Really?
And we met at Northwestern in Chicago and came here.
So what brought you to...
Our daughter was born. We were living on the north side of Chicago. We didn't want to live there with kids. So I just started flying all over the place. I knew I'd be back in graduate school the next year. But I just fly all over Eastern Canada and New England, and I got a bunch of jobs.
But I asked him to apply here to Prince Edward Island because my sister had given me the Anne Green Gables books, and I read them all 3 times.
So she knew about it.
When he was applying for jobs, I said, well, apply to Prince Edward Island because of Anne.
Right.
And he did, and he got a job.
You'd never actually been here? Read about it?
No, I didn't know where it was. It was pretty weird driving out the first time. We driving across New Brunswick, getting all the bush and all that, and we didn't
know
where are we going here.
Oh, my God.
We got from the prairies and plains and Mississippi River. I didn't know Maritimes much at all. New Ontario and Quebec and Manitoba, but that out here.
The first time we went to town, drove into town, this was like how many years
1970.
Okay. We were in the middle of town. I looked around. This looked like we came from Chicago.
Yes.
I said, "Sure, there has to be more." So we did get back in our car and look for more, and there wasn't any more.
Yeah. So you came here in 1970?
Yeah.
Did you come in the summertime? I hope you came in the summer.
In the summer.
Okay.
I didn't meet you, so I had to be here in mid-August, I guess it was.
Okay. Here you came as a teacher?
Yeah, I was in Kensington as a first year.
Okay. So whereabouts did you first settle? Is this where French River.
Yeah. I was teaching in Kensington, and the principal had an apartment lined up, but we didn't think much of it, so we looked around and found a place up the French River and really nice family, a Howard family, and that's where we spent that first year.
Did you stay there the 1 year?
Yeah, I know I was going back to graduate school and back to Northwestern for my master's the next year.
Okay.
Then I went to Boston University a couple of years, worked for a doctorate, and went around. My name came back here in 1974.
Was that in education that you were?
Health education.
Health education, okay. So you came back here, you spent 1 year here teaching, then you went back to school?
Yeah, but by the time we left, we knew this is where we wanted to settle. Yeah.
It's just
definitely.
Nice, eh?
Yeah.
Nice, place.
I mean, coming from Chicago.
You're from Chicago, and the place where I grew up, pretty rough town, too, and just that, just a lot more peaceful.
Yeah. So you went away with the plan to come back.
Mm-hmm.
When you eventually came back?
74.
74.
And that's when John was a month old.
Where did you come back to when you came back to the island? Did you have...
We had friends, got a teaching job at Athena in Summerside.
They wanted him to come back and play basketball with them, so they got him a job.
Yeah, that was part of the plot, too, but all that. But old teammates. And then we settled in Hamilton that year. And then that year we also bought this land. It just came up in the paper. I got this 12-acre field and 100-acre woods. So I took up a bulletin in the paper about a week, so I thought it was kind of meant to be, and had it all, and went from there.
So that's how much land you have here? 100 acres of wood?
I sold some through the years. I think we're down about 70 acres of woods now. And I sold this field, so it's a 6-acre field now.
Okay.
We have about 80-some acres.
So you picked up this around 74?
Yeah. I think they're still really priced.
Okay. How many people would have been in this area at the time, around the Dixon Road?
Well, the Dixon Road was always, always some people. The Dixons were here.
Yeah.
And they had a farm down there.
The Corsies were here. We had met them.
Yeah.
But when we were here,
In 70,
we met them. They were just very interesting. So we thought this would be a good place to settle. Also, it's halfway between Charlottetown and Summerside, and you can work in both areas.
Yeah, that's true.
And we knew we wanted to grow our food and stuff. We didn't want to really be on the shore because in the winter you don't want to be up there.
No.
The summer is nice, but this has just seemed perfect and great.
The Dixons were here and the Corsies were here.
Yeah. And the McClures.
McClures.
They had a big effect. We were really good friends with the McClures, Laurel and Gordon.
And so, of course, there have been no, in Genie, of course, there have been no people from Hawaii at that time.
Yeah,
they were the only ones from Hawaii.
They built their house, must have been the early 70s.
How many people ended up coming here from Hawaii? When I hear the story...
Quite a few. Diane Emery came pretty quick. She's from Detroit, too, isn't she?
Yeah, she's from Detroit, too, Diane.
And she just... was over here a little bit. And then Stanley's Malcolm and Christine came pretty soon after that. And Leon and Karen were over here.
And the Rombos.
The Rombos from Ontario.
I don't know why we all ended up here. You know, I think partly because of halfway between Charlottetown and Summerside. And land prices were really cheap, too.
Yeah. Wasn't it settled. It was still a little bit wild. And she was pretty nice.
Well, what kind of interaction would there back
then? Yeah, there's a lot of good music here. I mean, Lenny Glant was down the road there for a while in the 70s, and they had Speed the Plow and Kid Carson, and there's always good music around here.
Mm-hmm.
And Phil always had his parties. There used to be a corn boil. He'd have it in the summer and play softball and have a big corn boil, big party, and then it kind of evolved from there. It's also near his birthday. It's kind of his birthday. There's always a social scene, and there's always a good music scene here.
So there's always the music and the social scene.
But we all, we all kind of wanted to get away from the city. We really wanted to come back and grow all our food and leave all that
behind,
And
we live in land and all that.
Yes, we sort of rebel.
Yeah.
But if you see Detroit, you could understand what we rebelled against,
So you were there in the thick of things in the 60s, right? Just thinking that it's
Chicago Democratic Convention in 68,
and all the assassinations,
too. Yeah, it's a pretty wild time.
In the U.S., you sort of, thought Canada was a much better country.
It's much more peaceful.
Did you know really anything about Canada except it had the cleaner reputation? Did you ever even
visit
Ontario?
I did because we'd come, we'd go often across the river. Growing up in Detroit, we'd come over. Never went much past Toronto. I guess we went to Montreal a few times, too, when I was growing up.
I knew from Montreal all the way out to Alberta. I never been out for there.
Mm-hmm.
One time I would get camping trips when I was a kid, and we used to go camping up through there.
But it was a pretty conscious decision to leave. We wanted to leave.
Was there a political dimension there?
Like,
pretty well giving up on it. I mean, after all that that
after
happened.
Bobby Kennedy was killed.
That was one of the last things. And then we went to graduate school, and that's when Pretty Dick got in trouble with Watergate.
Yeah.
And, that was one of the last things, really. After all this stuff, you get more stuff in, school in the States for rah-rah America and, American government and politics and all that. And then they kind of, it's turned to, not being as good as it was after all those things happened.
So, not exactly the kind of place you want to raise kids.
No.
And I guess it's also the time, too, when you're finding rivers on fire. And,
all the pollution.
That's kind of...
Like major pollution.
The late 60s were pretty active time for all that stuff.
So why did Canada have such a good reputation?
I think we just came. We came and found out that it was a really nice place.
Okay.
The people were always so nice. And then, the environment was clean in those days. I mean, the air and water were extremely nice. Really, they were clean.
Yeah.
We came out of Chicago and Midwest and those things were unheard of.
When you first came, was it consciously just 1 year you were teaching, and you were planning on going back to school?
Yeah.
Okay, so you came here with no particular intention, thought it'd be interesting.
Just because of the band.
Get out of Chicago and get out of the big city.
You talk about being from Detroit. Did you have a garden there?
My grandparents were, I guess you could call them peasants from Poland. They came from Poland and. My grandfather was always growing things or trying to grow things. He had been a farmer and stuff, so it was that. But also when we first came, a big influence on us was Ruth Brewer. Okay, Jer taught her son Bob in Kensington, and Bob invited us for dinner to his mom's house, which was Ruth Brewer. And Ruth, she also had a place on the North Shore, her mother did, Mrs. Pearman, and they knew the Rawlings, Art and Guy Rawlings, which were organic farmers. So they had us for dinner one day, This was in Kensington. And everything was organic. They're talking, oh, organic beef, organic potatoes. I had never really heard, you know, I didn't know what organic was. I said, well, this is delicious, but what do you mean organic? And so they told me all about it and everything. And so that was a big influence.
Yeah. There's our neighbors too, Art and Alice, and they have it too. They were local farmers too, and they helped us get started a lot in gardening.
Yeah, they were Dutch.
Yeah.
They were great.
And then when I was a kid growing up, I spent a lot of, you know, a number of summers with my uncles, and they had farms in Northern Illinois and Southern Wisconsin, so I had a little touch of that too.
Yeah. Were you from a small town in Illinois?
Well, 50,000, and metropolitan area, about 500,000.
Yeah.
It's okay. Pretty, it's industrial, it's tractor factory, John Deere's headquarters are there. It's kind of shrunk over the years since, you know, tractor factors kind of cut back.
Yeah. So what kind of backgrounds were you coming from, like your family? Where did they, what areas were they working in?
My father was a welder and then a welding engineer for GI Case International. And then my mother was a nurse.
Yeah.
My father had his own company, just a small company in Detroit.
You found out about organic food, you started pursuing that. How did you learn just talking to them, you know, trial and error?
Oh, just trial and error, you know. The first year we came to Brett Alden, which was our second year back here, we lived on top of the hill next to the library, and people were laughing at us because we grew. We tried to grow all kinds of beans. We tried to grow garbanzo beans, soy beans, but we forgot to grow green beans. So that, you know, like we were just trying everything, you know. And, you know, we still grow all our food.
Yeah,
but
we had chickens that first year too, didn't we?
We had chickens? Yeah, we had chickens.
We had little chickens, little parents had chickens.
We just had meat chickens, not for eggs, because we don't have a big enough, you know. They kind of get too cold in the winter. We had them, but their combs would freeze off and stuff, and it's like a little, you know, we don't really want to do that. And we've tried raising ducks and geese and turkeys and, you know, just, I guess, fowl.
Yeah. In general, what kind of reception did people have from away?
Oh, they were pretty good to us.
They were really friendly people, you know.
Yeah.
They, all of them, the Wigmores and Snowys and all the local people.
Everybody went to Ivan's.
Yeah, Ivan's Community Store.
Ivan was great, you know.
And I was a teacher, so I, you know, knew all the people in those communities. And, you know, they're always, you know, I mean, there's always a thing about being from away. You know, and it's true when every meet and I out of our first time, oh, you're from away, oh, too bad. You know, but then you get to know the people, you don't feel that. I mean, it's real, you know, friendship. And,
but there's,
you know,
so many of us, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's going to be more all the time.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Chinese
and South America. They've been very, very, very good to us.
Oh, yeah.
I've been a librarian in Brett Alden for quite a while, when we have a little library down in the village too. And they were just, you know, so I got to know a lot of the local people and still do know them. And I'm quite involved in the council and, you know, I'm not on council, but as a librarian and, you know, we do things together and stuff. So I think they're just great, great people.
Yeah, I was also too.
The term back to Alliance, you guys used that in the day? Is that something you
know? Well, it was there, and back, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s, when that stuff came up. But
well, I got called, I worked in town full-time for a while, too, and, let's see, the National Film Board and the Media Center, it's part of the Department of Education.
Yeah.
They used to call me a granola bar. And a rubber booter.
Rubber booter, yeah.
I didn't kind of like that, but I don't mind being called the bat to the lander.
Yeah. Yeah, I was wondering if there's some kind of, is there some kind of stigma, or is it just seen as a, you know, a label that people in particular use?
Well, they had a reputation for being hippies around here, too. Yeah. People knew the hippies that were here, actually McGill University graduate students, out in Mill Builder's House.
Yeah.
You know, so they went away eventually, and some of them became really successful.
Yeah.
But the people who stayed were the ones, you know, those who bought the land and didn't mind doing the work.
Yeah.
You know, so that was the biggest difference. Like, you know, there's a lot of work to do between the gardening. I have 100 acres of wood, you know, I had 100 acres of wood on the 80 now, so there's a lot of work up there all the time.
Yeah.
A group like that.
Some of the things that struck me as funny, they thought, after I got to know some of the people more at the village, one time one woman asked me if I was Phil Corsi's sister. They thought I was Phil Corsi's sister. You know, we're both from away, and we both have, like, dark kind of curly hair.
Not in those days.
I got a kick out of that. So, you know, there is no relation, but so they were wondering about us, too.
Did you come across many, you know, kind of misconceptions back then about what people were doing out here? And you know, did they
have kind of local area here?
Yeah.
A lot of rumors or something. You know, it was a hippie thing.
Yeah, but I remember I even saying to me once, too, that, like, there was a carload of people stopped him and asked him where the hippies lived. He wanted to go look at the hippies, and he said, what hippies? We don't have any hippies around here.
Yeah.
So he always stuck up for us.
And did you get involved with any particular groups?
Well, I've been doing sports. I was a teacher.
Yeah.
I was supposed to coach for over 20 years around here.
You coached like a lot of
both in the schools and then in the community from Cornwall and Central Queens soccer and Cornwall softball. And I worked at the Department of Health and Social Services for a few years. And they worked, you know, there as well. So that's 2 years of teaching.
I got involved in school for a while. And my kids were going to Central Queens.
Of course, you've become famous for your cookbooks and your cooking. It's one of the one of these reputations that precedes meeting you. Is this something that you're always known for, or is this something that you really perfected on the island?
It really matters. You can hardly boil water.
I couldn't, which is
really?
Why I like to cook. No, my mother wouldn't let me cook because she didn't want me to mess up her kitchen.
Oh, no.
So I got to really like it, and I make a big mess, too, ask him. I really
the first, When I first got married, the best move I ever made is I bought her the gourmet cookbooks. And yeah, that was really fine cookbooks and kind of natural cooking and all that, so.
But I could not fry an egg. He had to fry my eggs for a while.
I couldn't figure out
how to flip them over, but.
She caught on.
I caught it. I just love it, you know, and so I just cook a lot. And people, well, for the first cookbook, people started saying, you should write a cookbook. You should write a cookbook. So I'm like, okay, maybe I should write a cookbook. So I did.
Yeah.
And we always had our food. We always used our own food.
Yeah.
That was part of it, too, just things you can grow locally and then,
And then, you know, got a little fancy. It did change over the years, you know, as you kind of learn more and try more. And so then people started saying, well, you should do another cookbook. You should do another cookbook. And I did. So,
there you go. That's how it happened. So it was something you learned through...
trial and error.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really love it.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I really, really enjoy cooking a lot. We still mostly eat at home, and I think we always will, because he's cooking more now, too. He's retired, so he's cooking, and both our kids are really good cooks. John's the cook in his family.
Really?
Yeah, his wife doesn't cook. She does the cooking. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's such a great thing for social.
It is. Yeah. We have the best potlucks. Believe the feasts. We have like incredible feasts around here when we get together.
And everybody's good cooks. They really are.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Well, when were you guys married?
69.
Okay. Just right before you really came out here.
Yeah, the thing I read more of this, to get out of Chicago, was really a daughter being born. You know, not want to grow up there on the north side of Chicago.
We got to get out of
here. That's the first big move, just, trying a lot of different places. Me and Wyatt up here, and just really liking it. It's so nice.
Yeah, I think we're just so lucky we came here.
Yeah.
So it's all really just the idea that you like Dan and the sounds of the island there.
Yeah, it was just sounded like such a nice place, and the people, and just the whole lifestyle. We wanted a different lifestyle, and I like that.
Let's see the time scale there, because you're saying you're probably the second family to move into this area here, and that was 74?
Yeah.
So, well, when did people really start coming here? When did they start?
Mid-late 70s.
Well, was there more people here now? Or then?
Well, apparently Brad came in 74, and Malcolm Stanley must have been by that same time, too. So.
No, actually, before Malcolm, Marg came.
Yeah.
Marg and Al were there.
Yeah. Brian came. Yeah. Again.
And there were people Ryan here Curry. Before us, too. There was Eric Reaver, and they were here for a while, and then they left, and now Mary Ann came, but just came back. So, you know, I think quite a few came, like, in the late 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
And then it's been every once in a while, somebody else will, you know, the younger people are starting to come back,
yeah,
which is kind of neat.
That's appealing.
Yeah, appealing. If you like rural living, you know, it's beautiful stuff.
Well, when you think back to this whole idea of living back to the land and getting into that lifestyle, what kind of reflections do you have? You mentioned moving to PEI was a great decision.
It was a lot of work. Like, we built this house, you know, and so that was in 76. So between teaching and hauling a couple hundred trees out of the woods, and there were mills.
With wood, just
yeah, and there were mills all around around here, like five or six, you know, sawmills. So we had an old truck that's still sitting out there, 1584, that hauled us to the mill, brought the wood back, and then we built, that's some one other good carpenter, and he helped me do it. And then we were still hammering away through that winter, and then just kind of keep adding to it, and then in the meantime, trying to grow our own food, and raising kids, and getting them around, so.
Yeah, a big part of it was building our own house. You know, we wanted to build our own house with our own wood and heat our house with our own wood, and we did.
It was cheaper than
doing it.
Windows came out of the Charlottetown Hotel.
Yeah, they were $4 each.
Did you have any prior experience building houses?
I built a little bit, but the guy I worked with was a good carpenter.
Oh, yeah?
You know, I learned fast, and I know how to work.
I cooked a lot that summer.
I can imagine.
It was a lot of work.
So this is the first house you built? With the help of,
Well, we built a little cabin in the woods first.
Okay.
Yeah, that was the first practice. And that was a little funky.
Yeah.
But, you know, the time I got to this, you know, I was getting better, and he was a good carpenter. Yeah. So.
Was he, air quotes for professional carpenter?
Yeah.
Was he a back-to-lander himself?
Yeah. He's in B.C. now. He's in North Vancouver.
He has a little furniture store there. He's, like, really well-made, handmade furniture.
Yeah.
That's great. So the idea of heating your own house with, you know, renewable source from your own land.
Yeah, it's passive solar heating. We knew all that stuff back then, too. And
thank God.
We just have, you know, wood heat. We don't have any oil.
Mm-hmm. No oil in the house.
Never will have oil.
Good for you.
Yeah. I'll get a backup propane.
Well, I should have had my oil fuel in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the pile of wood up there just drying out. Ways to come down.
What about things like electricity? Did you hook that up?
Mm-hmm. Oh, right away.
Right away?
Yeah.
And we've always had indoor plumbing.
Yeah.
We're not that bad.
We all went in and built the house.
Yeah.
We all had an outhouse for years, and sometimes the kids would run up here in the winter to use our bathroom. That tells you something.
Yeah.
At least the sun did.
Yeah. So, yeah, you didn't bother trying to live off the grid in that way?
No.
No.
Don't blame you on this.
After it was a good, you know, deal for a windmill, you might do that sometime, but, you know, it's no need of it.
Yeah, you didn't do a windmill, though?
No.
Really? I was amazed when I was listening to Roy Johnson talk about saying it's his own windmill.
Yeah, he did. He did.
Yeah. Talking about having to climb up in a winter storm to chip the ice off.
Yeah, and so it wouldn't fly away sometimes in heavy wind.
Yeah.
You know, things can really get ripping sometimes, too.
But you knew all about the passive solar energy and things like that?
And it really works. I mean, my goodness.
Like, in the middle of winter, we'll be minus 20, and sunny out, we'll be warm. We don't have to have anything on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have made quilts to cover the windows.
At night.
Like, I put a quilt up on this one. Because these are old windows. They're very leaky.
Yeah.
So I cover that for the winter, and then we put a quilt up that every night and take it down on this one just to keep the heat in, and that works.
Mm-hmm. When you were thinking about this lifestyle, did you have in mind any, you know, were there any figures that you're thinking of that, I don't want to say emulate, but you're thinking of, yeah. Or was it more just the locals that you looked at what they were doing?
There was a time, back in the late 60s, and people going back to the land. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were a lot of different little projects all across North America, you know, back then. You know, some of us had hippies, but there were a lot of other folks, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting out of the cities. And so there was that going on, you know, Fuller, Kellogg, and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Fuller.
You know, they had all those ideas or circling around back then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever read books by folks like Hellinger's Cotteneering?
Yeah.
I remember reading
them. Ken Kern, that was another one.
Yeah.
Ken Kern's owner-built homestead.
Okay.
And 10 Acres of Independence.
So that's all those readings were circulating among you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I think of it, I always think of one of the earliest guys. I guess he's after the Nearings, but Pete Seeger must have been pretty early moving back to New York.
Oh, yeah.
Songs that stick in my mind, like when you kind of think of what influenced you. Strawberry Fields Forever.
Oh, yeah.
I land here, the first year we came when we lived in French River, we found this wild strawberry field in Millvale, and it was like heaven to us. You know, we were going there every day and just picking wild strawberries and eating them and preserving them to take back to Chicago with us, and strawberry fields forever, you know? So that was an influence, and then when we were back in Chicago, it was Yellow Brick Road, getting out of the city.
Yeah.
But that song really was kind of an inspiration to me.
But there was a lot back then.
Who was that?
Elton John,
yeah.
Yeah.
Goodbye, Yellow Brick Road.
Do you, putting together a little soundtrack of
the life? The soundtrack you
want. Yeah. Do you bother going back home and visit much?
Once
you come back?
We saw the family back then.
Yeah, we get to see the family, but if you...
Our daughter went back to right to where we were in the middle of where we grew up.
Really?
Yeah.
In western Michigan.
Yeah, right between Chicago and Rock Island.
Yeah.
Or Detroit and Rock Island, sorry.
Do you ever miss the big city? Is there anything about it that you miss?
I always like some of the advantages.
Art museums. I was an art history major, and I love, going to
incredible restaurants
and restaurants.
I lived in Boston for, 2 years in graduate school. And
that's
a nice city. We go back there, and we like Montreal, and, make use of those cities. They're close enough, and they're good.
Yeah.
But getting back to our families, his mom and dad used to come up every year and visit us here.
Oh,
they
really?
Loved it here.
I always came
here. They loved
it. All my brothers and sisters and cousins.
Bring people with them all the time. We have 10 something show up at a time for a week, and they loved it.
Oh, yeah, I can just imagine.
My father didn't. He thought he was a Red City person, and the first time he came to visit, the year we were in French River, it was in April. And he was from Florida, and he hated winter. he was in Detroit, but when he sold his company, he moved down to Florida, so he was in Florida. He comes up, what do we have but a snowstorm in April? So he sat next to the stove, huddled up in his overcoat the whole time. Second time he came to visit us, we were in Hamilton. Whenever he tried to go for a walk, his cow would jump the fence and chase him back in the house. And he couldn't get his Wall Street Journal, and he didn't like it much.
Not his voice.
And we love the winters here too. We all go skiing, cross country skiing.
Yeah,
trails all around here.
Yeah.
All our friends go skiing. We have ski parties, and it's really nice.
Why do you think some people stayed and some people left? Little theories in my mind. Money?
Well, some of it's money.
Some people want a career, bigger career and more to it.
It isn't for everybody either. Some people are city people.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mark, he came really, liked the country for a while, but then he wanted more.
Yeah.
And, go back to lawyer lifestyle, and then one of the cool hippies down at Phil's went back and became a major urban developer. He's building big buildings. So they wanted a career.
Yeah.
Wanted, something a lot more. It's hard to get a real career here. There's a lot more opportunity elsewhere.
Yeah.
You can be isolated here, too. So if you don't like,
We always have a lot of friends, a lot of people. All those are ways to sit together.
Network. Yeah. I've always wondering too if the people that moved out here that actually were hippies, but, you know, you mentioned they're not the type of people that are really into working. Are they, you know, a lot of the people that left too came, tried it, realized.
A lot of work.
Take some of the fun out of it,
yeah.
The romance, and out of it.
Reality.
But, get hit with the first winter.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It can be a very long winter, and, you know, like we...
Well, this used to be a dirt road, too.
Oh, yeah, the mud.
You know, the mud. You know, there's stories about people getting stuck in the mud, you know, driving on this road, and their cars get mired in the mud, and then freeze overnight and frozen in the mud.
Oh, we stopped.
In the spring, you know, there's places you could have lost your whole car in some of the mud holes.
Yeah.
I've had my rubber boots sucked off by the mud.
Really?
It sucked them right off my feet.
That put a few people off.
That put me off, too.
Did you have much interaction with the, you know, the Bachelorland crowd? Wasn't in other areas? There's some other...
No.
Not much, but
the Gulf Pass area?
Yeah. It was a win, and then...
Not a lot, though. There's, you know...
Who shows? What kind, too?
But, like, John's good friend Jesse, you know, he grew up out there, and we never met his parents.
Yeah. That's pretty much all the questions I had to ask. Is there anything you'd like to add to this, really ask about, or anything you want to tell me about?
Well, just the work aspect. I mean, going back to land, that is some basic thing. You've got to be willing to do that part.
But it's nice work.
It's nice work. You know, working in the woods is heavy duty, kind of dangerous stuff. But, you know, it's nice work. And, you know, gardening's fun, you know, get your own food out of it's really kind of wonderful. But, you know, that was one basic, you know, real part of it.
Oh, just something, another thing that just popped into my mind, getting back to songs again, there's that one Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young song, my whole car froze up last night. Ours, I remember that did happen to us once we had a park at the corner. We had this Volkswagen hatchback, and it was all froze up.
Yeah.
Totally froze up.
Like half a dice or everything. Eh?
So we finally had to kick them through the back. I had to climb them and shove the doors out, and then Jer just sort of was all stuck to the ground, too. He kind of picked it up and shook it off a bit and pushed it forward a little, and off we went. But, you know, like you have things like that happen sometimes, and you wonder.
Anybody.
What did we come here for?
Yeah.
Why was it more trying, like April? November sometimes, too. I think it's kind of questionable whether you get in those time of years.
Yeah.
It's been great the last few years.
Yeah.
There hasn't been that much snow until this year, and then this year the snow went really quick. Yeah.
Well, in mud time, our first winter in the house, John was a toddler, and he was always a big boy, you know. And like our house was just surrounded by mud. So for like it was a month or 6 weeks, we tried to go out. He would fall in the mud, get covered with mud. I'd have to pick him up and carry him home and get covered in mud. And then I'd do the laundry. And that's
with
you
Ireland
know,
mud.
With Ireland mud. So the next month of April we left. That's when he was working for the government. He took his vacation and we cleared out.
We went
left. I didn't like the mud.
Yeah. Well, if you're losing your food in it.
There's a car in it.
Yeah. Staining all your clothes with it.
We finally got big, but there's so much mud. It's in December, and it's freezing thawing. And so the buses would come through and all the cars are going to be rushed like this. You know, so then it freezes. So they're beating their car to total obliteration. That's when I went to government and started. Yeah, we got to do something about this road.
Yeah, there's a lot of us living down here now.
I know, but we need a road.
It was that a hard fight to get that paved?
We've got an experiment that year. We got the first gravel on the island.
Oh, really?
So we were made an experiment. It didn't work all right.
It was very costly.
Yeah, and the gravel really held the ice. You know, it's the worst thing going for all the ice. So we went to an ice bobsledding for a while.
Yeah, that was another experience we had once. Two times to get home. We went into town for a party, but as soon as we got there, we didn't even go in. We came back home because it started freezing rain. And we didn't want to leave our kids for the night with the babysitter. And so we got as far as
the top of the hill.
And then we had to walk. Well, we did okay, so we got to the corner here, we got in the wind, we could not cross the road.
Mm-hmm.
It was so icy and so slippy, it just blew us right across.
Yeah, but we're at the top of the hill, and the thing was slippery, it's very tight all the way down. I just had to do a free fall like a bobsled run all the way down the hill, just had no, absolutely no control, and somehow got the car to stop the other side of the river there. And then we hit the wind, and it was ridiculous.
That was ridiculous.
So the times like that make you wonder.
Of course they would, you know, do the experiment with gravelers here.
Oh, yeah.
We got experiments with
it. Yeah, that's what it was.
You guys like experiments? So that, you mentioned...
You see the quality of Dixon Road, it drives down, and you'll see what we mean. We're still playing around here.
You turn onto it, it looks like gravel, then you hit a part where it looks like it's paved.
It's all full of potholes everywhere.
There's always been potholes.
And it's a weird-looking pavement when it's actually kind of paved.
Yeah, recycled gravel. I think it's round 2.
That's
round
okay. Yeah, because it looks kind of bumpy.
Then there's miles that come in the winter, and it just all scrapes up.
Yeah.
So it's pretty weird stuff.
Mm-hmm. But it is better than mud, so we're not...
Yeah, I think it's the... You mentioned...
Nice job.
You mentioned work. Are there other lessons about moving back to the land? You know, there's the hard work.
Well, just living with the environment, like we're kind of talking about the ice and the snow and all the rest and the mud. But then just the work aspect.
Be prepared to... He's
like a market gardening man, and he's got a huge garden. He's always working on that garden and selling it to, you know, restaurants. And it's definitely a work aspect.
You should really interview Phil. Yeah.
I think it was so unbelievably cheap back then, too. Like, the first year I taught, I made $6,700 a year. That's when we were paid, most
days. Yeah.
But I had enough money to go back to graduate school after it. You know, guys would show up with like a bag of carrots or a bag of turnips, and fishermen would show up with like a 60-pound cod.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of excited about
just
following this huge
car. The lobster would get from pretty cheap.
Different
kind of age, like a different time.
And how much would it cost to get, you know, 100 acres of woods back in the day?
$65 an acre.
$65 an acre.
Yeah, I know.
Inflation started in the mid-70s. And then prices started shooting up after that. The early 70s, it was just incredibly cheap around there. But it feels like $120 to make it.
$125, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, being from Illinois, new farmland, there was over $1,000 then.
Yeah.
Yeah, we kind of wish we would have had more money. Like, we had nothing. So, that's why we have to sell some. We sold the field and we sold Silver Woodlot to be able to put the down payment on to buy the land. We had nothing. Like, out of 3 years graduate school, just wipes you out. So we had nothing when we came back, but we did it.
It was house for $10,000.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That's our old lumber.
Yeah.
And all it worked.
I'd say it all worked. Yeah, it was one of the snowiest years we ever had around here. Mm-hmm. Like in December, the snow was to go power lines. December, and it just kept going. And the wind would come up. And if you drive down these canyons with white snow, and the wind would fill them in. So a lot of times I had to drive behind a snow pile, behind a bus, and then there's me, and then try and get back to Friends River. And Joan was just telling me your story.
My first snowstorm was a Saturday morning, and we usually went to Summerside to do the laundry, you know. We had a baby, you had to do the laundry every week, and Jared didn't want to go. But they were forecasting a snowstorm. I thought, oh, well, big deal, you know. So what? So I went to Summerside, and, you know, it starts to snow, and I'm looking, and it's really starting to snow. Like, oh, dear. I said, well, what do I do? He said, well, whatever you do, don't stop. Okay? So I piled everything in the car as quick as I could and got going. I did stop once. That was when I was off in the field and I couldn't find out where the road was. So I had to get out of my car to find out, you know, where the road was again. So I drove from Summerside to French River in a blinding blizzard. I just, in a little Volkswagen Bug, I went through drift after drift after drift. The only reason I didn't get killed because nobody else was stupid enough to be out there at that time. And our landlady would call and jab, what did you let her go for? You should have kept their home. Don't you know anything? No.
Debbie made it through your last month.
I did make it. I did make it back, and I fell asleep for like 2 hours. I just collapsed and fell asleep for 2 hours. So whenever I heard a snowstorm, I respected that.
Did anything like that ever make you say, if we have to put up with 3 months of this or 4 months?
No, not
like
really.
Snow is okay. It's just the thaw. It's the mud.
Yeah, the mud.
There's times when snow will be, 3 or 4 feet deep, and then all decide to melt at the same time and have these rivers of slush running downhill. I remember one time doing that, and I was carrying John home on my back.
I remember that.
They're up about a waist in slush. It was just ridiculous. I don't think I'll love that
time. Being flinging on your faces, and
yeah.
John was screaming because these ice pellets were pounding him. And Jared's tearing up this screaming kid with his bags of groceries, and the bags of groceries are breaking, and he gets in here, he says, "That's it! We're leaving!" I said it!